Good evening, everybody. My name is Sandy Carlson, and I'm going to be leading the class tonight. And it always cracks me up that the front rows are always empty. Hey, you, come on up. Okay, we are going to be doing just a little bit of basic meditation. So if you're sitting in a chair, you might want to grab one of those cushions because it just helps to get a cushion for your feet, because sometimes it helps to just kind of be able to put your feet on something stable or something a little bit warm. So just go ahead and grab something. There's a few around. And we're going to do this every class because this is a little bit of an introduction to Buddhism, and so meditation is a major part of it. For those of you that would like to, please feel free to sit down on the mats and then get up and go to the chair. We're not real formal here. So try it if you'd like to, and feel free to move to a chair up and down. It is just fine with me. But I'd like you just to be a little bit prepared so that when we start, we can give it a shot, especially since it's our first time. Please turn your cell phones off. I'm trying to remember to do that, too. I say this, and then mine would go off. All right. Or put it on silent or vibrate or whatever. I want to kind of, it helps me the first night. I know this is going to take a little bit of time, but bear with me because it will help our 5 weeks together. This class is going to be going for 5 weeks, August 26th through September 30th. Now, there's an extra week in there because the September 23rd, that Tuesday, that we're going to have a puja here, which is a prayer gathering. So we won't have class that night, but if any of you would like to come to that puja, I'll explain a little bit more about it later. But you're all welcome to come. But this class usually goes for 5 consecutive nights, 7 o'clock to 8:30. I do try to start on time and end on time. All right, so you can pretty much expect that. I'll leave a little bit of a buffer at the end of time because people like to ask questions, things like that. But you can usually count on being out that door at about 8:30, 8:35, okay? You do not have to come to every single class, or if some of your friends ask about this, they want to start next week, that's fine. You're more than welcome to invite people to come. We may lose a few people along the way if they decide that this isn't for them, and that's okay. But people are more than welcome to come. I'll try to do a little bit of review every single time to get us back up. But then about the fourth or fifth class, I'm hoping that we'll be able to do a little bit more deep diving, and it will help to have the base that we get for the first 3 classes. This is, let's see, I have been studying Buddhism for many, many years. I started my first experience with Buddhism was a book that my mother read to me as a child. I was very fortunate that my parents, being Westerners, one was Lutheran and one was Catholic, and even back in the day, they weren't allowed to get married, so they eloped. My father was military, and I've lived all over the world, and they opened up the world to me. All right, they wanted us to have a faith, and they presented pretty much everything to us. My brother's Catholic, my sister's Lutheran, and I'm Buddhist, and it's all okay, and it works. But I am one of the fortunate ones. So I have been practicing for a long time, but specifically I've been practicing Tibetan Buddhism since I came here to Kadampa Center 5 years ago. So I had a lot of knowledge, but I had a lot of black holes too. And so that's one of the reasons that I feel that this class is so important, because it is. It's those first steps. Many people are here for different reasons. We are not assuming that anybody here wants to be a Buddhist. This is not about proselytizing, and it's not about converting. I'm here to share information that I have learned on a very basic level about truly Tibetan Buddhism. We'll do an overview, but we're going to key in on a little bit more of Tibetan Buddhism. If you have questions, we usually have people from different world religion courses, people from different faiths that just want to understand another faith better, people that are interested and just want to touch on the path a little bit. Any place that you are on is perfect. Okay? I want you to ask your questions, and I want you to feel like this is a safe place to do that, because it's all okay. All right? So we're just going to you're checking it out. All right? So be comfortable with that. It's really important for me, it helps me to kind of gauge where people are. So we're going to do this quickly. I know y'all are going to go, oh, man, whatever. But to see where you are, Chris has a mic. Let me do a couple of introductions first. That's Chris Baranski. Stay standing up, Chris. Okay? He's our media expert here. And he helps because we record these classes. Okay, they're not for the general public. We pretty much keep them only on our members-only area of our website. But we record these so that people can have access. We're not recording the video, but we are recording audio. Now, we have a couple of other members here that have been studying for many more years than I have, and I'm going to introduce them too. Susan Potter, Richard Potter. They've been with Kadampa Center since its inception. Okay, and Susan is one of the leaders of this class sometimes, and so it's nice to have a few more people here so that you get a very well-rounded. We've got more people. If I ever, you know, go brain dead, I call them brain farts. I've got people to ask. Elise, where are you? You're hiding in the back. Elise Strebel is another one of our long-term members. Elise not only is one of the leaders of some of these things, she's our outreach coordinator as well, and she goes and helps present Buddhism to the different colleges in the area and helps with a lot of the student groups. So we're, this way it will help you to get many different perspectives on things, and some people will do a lot of repetition, but some people's explanation, because we all learn things a little bit differently, maybe the way I say something is going to work for some of you, but the way that Susan would explain something may be helpful for others. So we try to kind of mix it up a little bit. But what I'm going to do, I've given you a very brief overview of myself. Sandy Carlson, how I came to be here, and I want to pass the microphone around. We're going to get used to this microphone because as we ask questions, it's very easy for me to hear you, but for the people in the back to be able to hear what the question is, it's very difficult, and when you're listening to the audio, it's impossible and very frustrating. So I want, as we're going to start learning right now, as we start talking and asking questions, because I run a very interactive class, that we're going to use this microphone. So what I'd like Chris to do is pass this mic around. I want you to give me your name. I want you to give you just a brief synopsis of why you're here tonight and where you're at on the path, and I can explain that a little bit later. So let's just start. Yep, start there and go from there.
My name is Hannah, and I just came here to learn more about Buddhism because I was interested in it.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Hannah. Love the hair. I so want to do something like that.
My name is Sonia, and similar to Hannah, same reasons. I've always been curious about different faiths. I never really found one that fit before, so I'm interested in Buddhism and just to learn more about it.
Checking it out. That's perfect. Thank you. Go right back there.
I'm Tiago. I started reading into Buddhism over the summer, and I primarily read Buddhism for Dummies, okay, and I want to learn more about it.
So, okay. Yeah. It's a good book.
My name's Colin. I want to become better at meditation.
Okay. So.
My name's Becca, and I wanted to hear how the Buddhist community teaches about themselves. So instead of learning about it from a class from someone else, I'd like to hear it from an insider perspective.
Okay. That's a good. I haven't heard that one before.
Hi, I'm Robert, and I was just curious about the details of Tibetan Buddhism.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Aaron. I'm here to also learn more about Buddhism.
Same here. My name is Chantel.
Hi, Chantel.
I'm here following my husband who's studying Buddhism.
Okay.
I'm Bob. I'm a recovering Episcopalian. And I've read several books on Buddhism. I've been to the One Buddhism Center in Chapel Hill two or three times, and I'm trying to understand the different types of Buddhism.
Okay, is that one a Zen center that you've been to? Do you know?
No,
in Chapel Hill?
The One, it's a Korean Buddhism.
Korean? Center. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So, well, I've also been to Mongolia, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Philip. I just came to learn more of the foundations of Buddhism. I've been here a number of times.
Okay.
My name's Guy. I want to deepen my meditation practice. I learned Buddhism through Jack Kerouac.
Okay.
And I like it.
Okay.
Hi. My name is Zach. Studied for a couple weeks now. Read a few books. Watched some videos on Netflix and stuff like that.
Checking it out.
Yep. I don't know anything, but I think I'm in the right place.
That's awesome.
Hi, I'm Patrick. I've been getting more interested in mindfulness over the last few months, and I figured I may as well stop having these books allude to Buddhism and start actually learning about it.
Okay. That's good, too. I haven't heard it put quite that way.
Hi, I'm Amber. I come on this for the Sunday teachings, and I enjoy it, and I just wanted to learn more.
Okay.
I'm Becky, and I come with her on Sunday, so.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Carol, and I've read a few books. I like the way it feels, and I think it's going to be a good fit for me.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Chip. I first had exposure to Tibetan Buddhism back in the 90s when I was doing a little traveling over in Nepal. And so I just felt like it was that time in my life to revisit some of the things I'd learned there and pay a little more attention to it.
Hi, my name is Lauren. Taking a few world religion courses and similar, just wanted to learn from Buddhists themselves, other than just reading books and watching documentaries on Netflix.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on.
Yeah.
I'm Matthew, and I'm just here, like, I've lacked a form of spirituality about me, and I feel like Buddhism could be it, so that's why I'm here.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm here just to learn more about meditation, Buddhism in general.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Sherry, and I'm here to learn a little bit more about Buddhism.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Lori, and I'm Hannah's mom, and I'm here at her request, actually.
Okay.
I'm Annalisa, and I want to achieve balance, and I would like to get rid of negativity and be around positive people. Learn to be positive all the time.
Happy. Let's be happy. Okay.
My name's Rob, beginner at this Buddhist thing. I want to learn more about meditation, how to control my mind a little bit better, slow down a little bit in life.
Okay.
Good. I am Carol. I have felt attracted to this for quite some time, but definitely am a beginner.
I'm Courtney. I'm just here to learn more about Buddhism and mindfulness.
Hi, I'm Jody. I'm just here to learn more about Buddhism as well.
Hi, I'm Jill. I'm here to learn more about Buddhism and balance.
Hi, my name's Anayat. Anayat is a Persian name. I'm a dance leader for Dances of Universal Peace, and that's supported by a community of Sufis who also have influence from Zen from the West Coast. So, I'm here to learn more about, we have a number of Buddhist dances and different things. So.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Gauri, and I'm a yoga teacher. And what I've determined is I need more structure. And from my teeny exposure to Buddhism, they really like structure. Mm-hmm. So my natural tendency is aversion, but I'm trying.
My name's Jeremy, and like others have said, I've read some about Buddhism, but I would really like to just deepen my understanding of the religion.
My name's TK, just checking it out, trying to develop my beginner's mind and look at things through Buddha eyes. I'm definitely just beginning, though.
I'm Rebecca, and I started meditating about a year and a half ago. It had a really good effect on my life and my health, and so I'm here to learn more.
I'm Fred, and my wife and kids and I started coming here about 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I'm here to learn more about it
And our family wants to become part of something together to bring our family closer together.
Thank you. I'm Seth, and I'm here to learn more about Buddhism.
Okay.
I'm Dana, and all new to this, here to just learn more about Buddhism. I was raised a non-denominational Christian, but not sure that it's really the right fit for me, so I am looking for something different now.
Hi, my name's Jeff. Growing up, I basically had a falling out with religion and spirituality. The churches that I grew up with, the denomination they were mostly interested in was 10s and 20s. So I'm looking for something a little bit different now, and I've always been a little bit interested in the spirituality of Buddhism, so I wanted to find out some more about it.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. Like so many others, I've done a lot of reading, watched the documentaries, and I'm looking for a community of like-minded people that we can start this journey together.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chris, and I was raised Mormon, but I feel really disenfranchised right now, so just out here exploring.
Hi, I'm Jeff. I was lucky enough to meet a pretty devout Tibetan Buddhist in the 90s and practice with him for 6 months, and have been on and off with it after we moved apart. Since then, mostly off, and moved to Cary, drove by the stupa outside, was pretty shocked, and started coming and joined a couple months ago. I'm just trying to get back into it because I know that meditation is the answer to, you know, everything for me, basically. So.
Hi, I'm Megan. I've been exposed to Christianity and Judaism, and this is my first time in a Buddhist temple, so trying this one out. And plus, my dad gave me a ride, so that was
okay.
Cool.
I'm Susan. As Sandy said, we have been coming here for since maybe 93 or 94. I didn't think I was going to become a Buddhist. I just wanted to stop yelling at my kids, and so who are toddlers at the time. And so I took a meditation class, and it's helped a lot.
I'm Richard. I'm just here to spend time with my wife, and I was interested in seeing... seeing who was coming, and I'm really pleased that so many people are here. Chris wanted to spend time with my wife, too.
Oh, boy. My wife says that she should keep us apart. It's way too much fun at these classes. I've been studying here, since about 2002, and just Christianity wasn't really working for me, so I came here and it all just fit, and so that's why I'm here.
Okay. I know that took a little bit of time, but it gives us a couple of things. Number one, it lets you all learn to deal with the mic, which is really important. And number two, it kind of gives us a pulse of we're all here for many of the same reasons, okay? We're just checking it out. It's always interesting to me because these classes are different. The last session, we probably had about 30 people in the last session, and almost entirely that group were practitioners. They have been practicing someplace else and reading. So all of a sudden, it was a little bit of a different class. So I really like to get kind of a pulse of, you know, where we are as a group, and so that we can, in some ways, individualize for some of the people I think are looking for more specific things. We'll talk about that a little bit. But it just gets you all comfortable. And the funny thing is that as we go with this 5 weeks, this will become a little bit of a tight-knit group. It's always interesting to me to watch groups come together through Kadampa Center. Okay, we have all these different classes, and it's really funny to watch because if you guys, you know, continue to come here, you will probably be more familiar with the people in this class than you will some of the other groups, because this is where we started. So I just like to see that. But you just feel a little bit more comfortable because you realize that everybody here, there's so many people that are here for pretty much all the same reasons. Okay? So we're just gonna start where we are. So a few logistics. if it's your first time here at the center, the bathrooms are straight out that door and hook a left. If you need to use the facilities at any time, go ahead and get up and go. Again, this is not going to be a real rigid class. Just be comfortable and try to be aware of others if we're in the middle of a meditation. There's usually drinking water out by the front door, and they're little plastic cups. Help yourself. Sometimes we have hot water and coffee. This is a volunteer organization, so if you use a cup, you take it back to the kitchen, which is just past the restrooms, and you wash it yourself. It's just like being home. All right? So we're an all-volunteer. It really is helpful if I don't have a bunch of dishes to do at the end of the night. So kind of help yourselves. Again, the kitchen is right around the bathroom. Parking, sometimes we do get a little bit busy. So you can see that we've got the parking area out here. You can park along the street. We're also able to park over by those white trucks across the street in that parking lot. Don't park anywhere else back there, because we've got one company has some very specialty vehicles that they need to be careful of. So park in our parking lot, along the street, in the front of the Smith Exterminating and behind the Smith Exterminated. It probably will get a little easier as we go, because we'll probably have a few people drop out. I'll alienate somebody. And so, just, you know, we'll figure it out as we go. Again, we're going to meet for the five Tuesday nights, but it's going to take 6 weeks to do this time. The recommended books for this course, you don't need them, okay, but if you choose to, one is, I should have... Buddhism in a Nutshell. Venerable Amy Miller wrote this. We are out of them right now, so I'm sorry. They're on order. Hopefully we'll have them. This is the phenomenal book. Venerable Amy Miller, who is a Buddhist nun that has been... she's phenomenal. I've had a chance to learn from her directly. Everything that I talk about in this class and that we talk about in Buddhism in a Nutshell is in here. And this is like on steroids, okay? Because I've got an hour and a half to try to cover all these. She's got the whole time that she can write the book. And there's a CD, an audio CD, where she does the meditations and she also reads the book. So if you're interested, I can't recommend this enough, because there's a lot of the basics. And the general term that we want to learn is in this book. Another really good one. I know it sounds funny. Buddhism for Dummies, man. I love these for Dummies books. And while this sounds so funny, here's the factual statistical things that we need, are just the nuts and bolts, because this is where we have to start. This is the base. We're going to talk about a lot of this stuff in this class, just the base, especially tonight, because we have to have the base to start to build on. Okay, so these are the two main books that we recommend for this class. There's many phenomenal others, but we'll work with these first. This class has no tests. You can read the books or not. This is completely up to you how far you want to take it. So the recommended reading is there. I can recommend other books for you as well, depending on where you're at. But this is very much just a basic beginner course. We are not going to do any what I call deep diving. We're going to be skipping along the top of a lot of subjects, okay? I'll try to answer your questions as best I can. So we have this Buddhism in a Nutshell class. This class alternates with Meditation 101 class. So those classes alternate. This will be 5 weeks, then a small break. The Meditation 101 will go, and then Buddhism in a Nutshell will go. So this class alternates, all right? We'll do a little bit of meditation in this class, but there will be a much deeper meditation practice, and you can do the whole hour and a half will just be on meditation. We're going to be talking about everything from the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, his history, the history of Buddhism. We're going to touch on karma. We're going to touch on emptiness, but we're skipping along the top. This is like the first rung of the ladder if you choose to move on. This is just the basics. We have a two-year course called Discovering Buddhism, where we will go into all of these things much more detail. Okay, like we're going to have 20 minutes in session four to talk about karma. They've got 5 weeks, 6 weeks, an hour and a half session every Monday night to go in depth with karma, to go in depth with the spiritual guide, to go in depth with mind and its potential. So this is just like tasting. This is the appetizer. Okay, for all your questions that you're going to have, we're going to try to keep it on top. Okay, so I'd appreciate if nobody deep dives on me here with these questions. We'll know it when we do it. Okay, but this is the basics, all right? The handouts, we do have handouts. They are online. These are some phenomenal handouts that were developed by Amy Miller and some of the other people. There are meditation handouts. There are some of the major Buddhist prayer handouts, a few other things as we get to. So if you go, our website is kadampa-center.org. So if you click on that, go to the website, and then you'll click on spiritual programs and find Buddhism in a nutshell. Click on that. The handouts will be there as PDFs. Okay? And we'll go through these. Most of them are meditation handouts, and again, there's a few others. So that information is going to be on there. All right, we're going to start with just Okay, so we're going to start with just a very, very brief introduction to meditation. For those of you that have been doing this for a little bit, I'm going to ask you to just kind of go with it. You may have been meditating in another style or another practice. I'd like to ask you to give this a shot because there is a difference in meditations. And I'll explain more as we do it, but try to be a little bit open to this and give it a shot, okay? So the first thing we're going to do is there's an actual meditation posture that we recommend, and it's called the 7-point posture. And there's a reason for this, all right? The best way I can put it, I'm just going to talk about it, okay? Because sometimes when I try to read it, I sound more stilted. Sitting on a cushion, there is nothing holy about sitting on a cushion. We are meditating to look at our minds. So we have a posture that helps us to create a stable body position that can be maintained for a long time. So I'm going to walk you through how the legs are, how the arms are, how your jaw and your head should be. This is not about woo-woo. This is about an actual posture that can be maintained because it gives us so that we can let go of, ow, my leg hurts, or, you know, I need to swallow the saliva, or I'm being distracted by people walking around. There's a reason for everything that I'm going to explain, okay? And this is an actual meditation posture that has been developed by the Tibetan Buddhists for over 2,500 years. So I think that they pretty much know what they're talking about. It works for me, and we'll work on ways that it can work for you. Whether you're sitting on a cushion or sitting in a chair or laying on your bed, I'm going to walk you through the position and I'm going to explain why. I'm a person that has a bad knee, okay? I can sit on a cushion for a little bit and then my knee will start to ache, and that's disturbing to me, so it doesn't work for me. So therefore, I do most of my meditating sitting in a chair. That's just fine. There's nothing holy about sitting on that cushion. There's a purpose to meditation, and we have to figure out the best way. I'll explain what they've worked with, and then if we need to adapt from there because of different things, then we do so. Does that make sense? Again, nothing holy about this. We're creating a posture that can be maintained for a long period of time while we look at our minds. Okay? So, legs. If possible, you can sit with your legs crossed in the Vajra position. I see a few of you there already. That's that full lotus position where you bring your legs up and you put your feet on there. You know, I could do that when I was like 15. Doesn't work now. So if you can do it, that's wonderful. Again, this gives a very stable base. If you're sitting in a chair, sit a little bit forward in the chair. We're not going to slump back. I want to sit a little bit forward in the chair. Put your feet flat on the ground. All right. The Vajra position, sitting with your legs crossed, the Vajra is, of course, the ultimate because that gives a very, very good solid base. And it is possible to do over time. Don't expect that if you're going to try to do this, that you're going to get here tomorrow. But over time, you can get there. All right. So, again, patience with yourself to do this. All right, if we're sitting in a chair, we're going to sit a little bit more forward in the seat so we're not slumping back. All right, you can also sit in a half lotus position where one foot's on the floor under the opposite leg. You could sit in just a simple cross-legged position. If you're sitting on the cushions, if you're a little bit in front of the cushions, it forces your back a little straighter. Okay, it forces your spine to act a little bit greater if you're sitting a little bit more forward on the cushions. Okay? But the most important thing here is to find something that is comfortable because we want to get in a position and then we want to forget about it. Okay, arms. You Keep your arms slightly loose. In this tradition, in our Tibetan Buddhist tradition, we take our right hand and we put it on our left hand and we put it on our laps and we lightly touch our thumbs together. There's a whole big long story behind that and we'll talk about it later. Okay, but that leaves the arms a little bit akimbo, which is such a funny word to me. Now what does this do? This creates air. When you're sitting for hours in meditation, if you're hunched up and stuff, you can get, especially if it's a hot day, it can be a little smelly. You know, this is air. It lets your body breathe. Again, there's a reason for everything that we do. Okay? So it's just kind of getting in that stable position with your arms. Your back is critical. All right? We want our back to be straight but not stiff. All right? Because this is where we're going to kind of open our back up. So you want a straight back, but you don't want a rigid. It's kind of like coins stacked up. All right? So you've got your back straight. The shoulders are going to be back, kind of what I kind of call a regal position. So your shoulders are back. We're not hunched over. The reason that we're doing this, it expands our lungs. All right? So we're opening this up, our arms, our shoulders, our back. The eyes, in the beginning, a lot of people close their eyes to meditate. All right? So if possible, that's perfect. I tend to do that a lot. But you want to have your eyes possibly slightly open and maybe looking unfocused about 5 feet in front of you. You don't want your eyes up here because that will allow for distraction. If you totally close your eyes, you need to be aware of falling asleep or becoming drowsy. So this is why in the perfect world, you want to have your eyes slightly open but not really focused, but in front of you, not up, not closed, right there. Your jaw and your mouth should be relaxed, your teeth slightly apart, and your tongue on the roof of your palate behind your front teeth. Why? It helps for the saliva. If you're constantly swallowing and stuff, that's always a distraction. Again, there's a reason for all of this. All right? Once you start doing this, it'll become very natural. I have to actually think to explain this because I'm so used to just falling into this. But once you start doing this, you'll fall into it. Okay, your head should be slightly tilted forward, not down because that's drowsy, not up, it allows distractions, slightly tilted forward. One of the ways that it helped me to remember is from the crown of my head, if I pretended that there was a string down my body, if I pulled on it, it kind of forces me to elongate my neck and my back. That's just a little thing that I started doing many years ago. Okay, so that is the 7-point meditation posture. That's one of the handouts that's on the website. Okay, so it's just going through that, getting in that position so that you can try to do it. Okay, we're gonna do a very brief meditation. Okay, so for right now, I want you to get in that 7-point meditation posture. Think about those 7 points again and just follow my voice. Think about those 7 points. Your legs, your arms, your back, your eyes, your jaw and mouth, your tongue, and your head. Scan your body and see if there are any issues and try to work them out a little bit. Just give yourself a minute to settle into this position. First, we'll do 3 deep breaths, and we'll want the stomach and lungs to expand. So take 3 deep breaths. Now allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. We begin every meditation by setting our motivation, which is the reason that we're doing this. Why am I doing this? Why, out of all the things that I could be doing right now, am I sitting on a cushion at Kadampa Center with my eyes closed? Whatever reason prompted you to do this, that's great. If you're just here out of curiosity, that's good. If you're just here to see if it quiets your mind, gives you a little mindfulness, helps to relieve some stress, that's great. If you're here because you want to be a kinder person, that's wonderful. But it said that the best motivation, the most powerful one, is that if we could even think something as simple as this, sitting quietly for a couple of minutes is being done by me so that I can benefit all living beings. It probably sounds ridiculous, but even just thinking that way, even if we just have to force it out, it's said to make an imprint on our mind that because of the laws of karma, they will inevitably ripen in a positive way in the future. No ifs, ands, or buts. It will happen that way. It will have a beneficial result at some point in the future. So grit your teeth, force it out. This is a Mahayana great motivation. I am sitting here at Kadampa Center listening to Sandy talk because it's going to make me a kinder, more compassionate person. I'm working on my mind to be of benefit to all living beings. So just sit with that thought for a minute. Having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation. We're going to do a very simple, it's simple but it's not easy, concentration meditation. All we're going to do is pay attention to our breath. The movement of our breath in and out through our nostrils. We place our awareness on that, nothing more, nothing less. The mind perceives the breath. We could almost say that the mind and the breath are one. Just breathe normally in and out and be aware. We're not describing the breath. We're not counting the breath. We are just directly experiencing the breath. Every time we notice that your mind is experiencing something else, a sound, a sore muscle, thinking about what you're going to do when you leave the center, thinking about work today, something happened today. Anytime you find your mind is off the breath, drop that and come back to perceiving the breath over and over again. The mind is becoming familiar with the experience of the breath. And that's the meditation, coming back to the breath over and over again. Now we can end our meditation with what we call a dedication. We mentally give ourselves a little pat on the back. We acknowledge that we've done something that is a little out of the ordinary for us. We tell ourselves, good job. We reaffirm that our motivation is that simple meditation. May it make on our mind stream an impression that will ripen in a way that benefits all living beings. So just think that way for just a moment. Okay, relax and bring your attention back to the room. In Tibetan Buddhism, there are two major categories of meditation. All right. The first is concentration meditation. That's what we just did. You pick an object, you concentrate on that object. And this time we chose something, a very neutral object, the breath. Okay, you always have your breath with you. That's a neutral object. All right. This is to help us develop the ability to concentrate. All right? We think we have this ability to concentrate. Okay, we all think that way. But if you sit down and you try to meditate and concentrate on one thing, you will discover how very difficult that is. Okay, we think we can do it. It sounds easy, but it's not. But that very simple concentration meditation, it's practicing that over and over so that you're starting to build the muscle. It's kind of like going to the gym. Okay, you're going to go to the gym and you're going to start working with these weights so that you can go out and do some athletic event. But you have to do this first in order to be able to do that. You have to go to the gym and practice and do all your basics with basketball before you can go play in a game. You have to go and train before you can go run that marathon. Concentration meditation is training. You're training the mind so that you can work with the mind. All right. We talk about multitasking. Everybody talks about being able to multitask from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective. That's impossible because your mind can only focus on one thing at a time. Okay, so we're concentrating. We'll flip back and forth, but we have to concentrate on one thing. Thoughts change very, very rapidly, but you can really only have one thought. There's a class, Mind and Its Potential. Discovering Buddhism is going to be starting. Did that start yet? I don't think it did. That two-year course of Discovering Buddhism that I talked about, you guys have no clue what perfect timing and phenomenal karma you have, because Discovering Buddhism, the two-year course, is getting ready to start again. The first class is called Mind and Its Potential, and it is phenomenal. Robbie Watkins can go over in 6 weeks something that I have to do in like 10 minutes. Seriously, it's one of my all-time favorite classes. If you can do nothing else, try to check that class out, because it really helps to understand what we're talking about here, because Buddhism is all about the mind. Okay, so in order to study Buddhism, we study meditation so that we can look at our minds. Concentration meditation is the practice to get our minds in that ability that we can control them a little bit better. And analytical meditation is where we actually take a subject and start to break it down. So concentration meditation and analytical meditation. Several of you said that you wanted to learn more about meditation. These are the basics of Tibetan Buddhist meditation right there. Concentration and analytical. The next class that will be offered is Meditation 101. You can truly do much more deep diving there. We'll do some basics here that will give you a nice base for that class. Okay? But this is Tibetan Buddhism meditation. Concentration, analytical. Okay? We will do basic concentration meditations for probably about the first three classes. We'll try to do one at the beginning, a very brief one. We'll try to do one at the end, and maybe the third or fourth session I'll bring in an analytical meditation so you can kind of see the difference. Okay? But we got to work on this a little bit before we can get to that. Okay? Because you're not going to become enlightened by paying attention to your breath. So, but we have to start someplace. Okay? Any questions about this at all, or actually anything that I've said so far? This first class is really about setting the basics, and it's about me regurgitating a bunch of stuff. I do promise that once we get rolling, we'll be up, we'll be moving around, and we'll have much more discussion. But right now, I've just got to set the base, okay? Anybody getting tired, getting bored? Yes, ma'am.
I just have a question.
Mike, we're going to get used to this right now. Although I can hear you, it would be fine. We're going to start the way we mean to continue.
I was just wondering if it's in through your nose, out through your nose, or does it matter how you're breathing?
There's different meditations that have different.
Okay.
Okay? So a lot of times I'll tend to do through the nose. Okay? But there's different meditations that, like, there's non-round breathing that will actually tell you which nostril. So there's. I'm going to be careful of that question. Some will be this way, some will be that way.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Good question, though. Maybe we'll do 9-round breathing sometime. That'll be a good one. Okay, so let's set the tone for what we're going to do for the next 5 weeks here. First, tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about Kadampa Center. We're going to do a little bit of the history of the Buddha and Buddhism. and we're going to try to get to the beginning of some of the Four Noble Truths. Okay, we will not. This is going to kind of be up there the whole time, because that's going to be the base of what we're doing. It's the Four Noble Truths. How many people have heard of the Four Noble Truths? At least first blush. Okay, that is really the outline of our class right there. Okay, so we're going to get the base, and then we're going to start digging into this. Okay. And you'll be able to ask your questions, and we'll get going. But let me just get through some of these a little bit of these facts that we have here. Okay? Kadampa Center. You are at the Kadampa Center. We are a Tibetan Buddhist class for the practice of Tibetan Buddhism. Kadampa Center for the practice of Tibetan Buddhism. Kadampa means those who take the Buddhist teachings into practice. Into our everyday lives. That name was given to us by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. So we're going to back up. Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and in fact, I'll show you. Let's go here so that you can see who we're talking about. Okay, Lama Yeshe, this picture right over here. Lama Zopa Rinpoche, this picture right over here. Everybody recognizes the Dalai Lama? Yes? Okay, Dalai Lama in the middle. Way back in the day, all of the hippies. We're heading over to Nepal to learn about Buddhism and become enlightened, all of that stuff. Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche were in one of the monasteries, and they decided that since all of these Westerners were coming to us, we need to go to them. Okay? They brought Tibetan Buddhism to us. And they came over to the United States, and they started traveling, and they actually created the FPMT, which is the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. That is the governing organization that has probably 170-something, 180 centers worldwide. All right, this is a huge worldwide organization. Kadampa Center is affiliated with that. We don't get any monies or anything from that, but they help us with our teachers. We share FPMT teachers. We're able to travel. There's different centers all over the world. Some of the teachers around the world come and will teach here. And our teacher, Geshe Gelug Choda, who is our resident teacher, he travels as well. So he's with us for probably 7-8 months out of the year. Then he will also, like right now, some of you have been coming on Sundays to see him. Now he's traveling. He'll take a brief vacation, but then he's going to be going into retreat and then also doing some teaching at other centers, because that way we get to share the knowledge of these phenomenal teachers. I lead this class. I do not teach this class. All right? I'm a good person for a brief overview. You want to learn Tibetan Buddhism, you go to Geshe. All right? We have some phenomenal, phenomenal teachers here. I'm not one of them. I'm a little introductory person, so let's know what you're getting into right here. All right? I'm just being honest. I will try to always tell you, because it's my job to tell you what I've been taught. I'm going to try to keep it away from Sandy's opinion, or if I tell you something that is, I'll be very clear. Because we're going to be talking about Tibetan Buddhism from what I have been taught by Geshe, by Amy Miller, from these people, okay? If I try to go off track, I'll try to be very honest with where this is coming from. All right, so the FPMT, 170, 180 centers worldwide. Kadampa Center is one of them. We are actually a huge center comparatively. Kadampa Center is growing phenomenally. Raleigh is one of the top 10 cities for Buddhism in the United States. We're a direct recipient of that. We're a very large center. We have a very, very vibrant children's program. Okay, we're one of the largest children's program in the FPMT. In fact, many of the other centers are looking at how we're doing things to see why are we so successful here. Most other centers, whether FPMT centers or any type of Buddhist center or any type of classroom type of situation, charge fees for coming in. They charge membership dues, all of these different things. Kadampa Center works on the idea of generosity. It's one of the six perfections of Buddhism, and we take that to heart. So we do not charge for any classes. We do not charge for any of the things that we offer here. All right. We really hope that everybody gets something out of it, and by that, that you will feel moved to help share in the costs and the expenses that we have. I don't get paid to be here. Chris doesn't get paid to be here. In fact, we have a very small paid staff, and if I figure out how many hours that they work, I'm pretty sure they're paying us to work here. All right. We do not charge any classes. In fact, I used to be able to say that we were the only center in the FPMT that did that. And since we've been successful, they're trying to figure this out, and there's several other centers that are giving this a shot. So we've got the FPMT. The Dalai Lama is part of the Gelupa tradition. I'll go into more of the schools of Buddhism, but the Kadampa Center follows the lineage of the Dalai Lama. So what we learn here, why is that important? That's the lineage of the teachings. We know exactly what we're going to be taught here. For those of us that were specifically looking for lineage, we were looking for the teachings, it was very important that we know exactly what we're getting. It's not some New Age thing, although there's nothing wrong with that. I was very specific that I want this. So I know with that Gelupa tradition and the Tibetan tradition, I know what I'm going to get. Okay, that's very important. It's just like going to college and you pick a specific line of curriculum. You know what you're not going to go to a nursing class and all of a sudden be getting some kind of, basketball classes or something. You know that this is the line that you're going to get. I was going to say something else, so I had to edit. Okay, so it is. It's really important that we know what we're getting here. So we're in the Gelupa tradition, okay? We do have many different classes. Meditation classes, Buddhism in a nutshell. We have advanced practitioner classes. We have basic program classes. And we really have something for everybody. We have Sunday teachings. We have prayer meetings. If you want to go down the Buddhist path, you can go down into the ritual side of things. If you want to just go on mindfulness and take some of the trappings off, you can go down there. It's just like you walked into a shopping center, a grocery store, and you have all of this. It is up to you to figure out what you want because it's all here. Okay? So you get to choose based on what your needs are. We have a lot of people that come here that are not Buddhist. They're Christian. They're Jewish. Okay? They're Muslim. This, you do not have to be a Buddhist to attend Kadampa Center. It is all open. In fact, my teachers have said that Buddhism is not a religion. No, 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 Sandila. No, no. This is a way of life. All right? This is not a religion to them. It is a way of life. Now, granted, if you were going to go into being a monk or a nun, well, you kind of got to do those trappings, and it is a little bit more of what Westerners consider a religion. Okay? But for those of us that are practicing, it really is a way of life. This is the way I try to look at it. All right? I'm getting off track. I tend to do this. I know. I love this class. I'm excited about this. It works for me, so I like to share that information. Okay, so Kadampa Center. We are a basic 501c3. We've got a board. We've got all the... Richard is the past board president. We have a very, very vibrant community. So those of you that are kind of looking for something, check it out. All right? Again, I offer it all. You choose what you're going to pick up or not. Okay, let's go to Shakyamuni. Shakyamuni Buddha, the life story. This really kind of starts to set some of the tone, okay? Shakyamuni Buddha was born, 2600 years ago into a royal family of King Shidona and Queen Maya. You can read all of these. If you've seen the movies, then I'm just giving you the factual things here so that you've got that base. Okay, the baby was named Prince Siddhartha Gautama. And when he was born, his father, the king, brought in a seer to do kind of a reading over him. All right, a prophet. And that prophet predicted that this child was destined to either become king of the world or a great spiritual teacher. This was what the reading was. Now, the king, of course, wanted his son to follow in his footsteps. I'm going to westernize this so that we all understand this. The king wanted his son to follow in his footsteps, very similar to what we all do now with our kids. Okay? You want your children to follow in your footsteps. We have a lot of mother-daughter type of things here, father-son things. Okay, so you want your kids to kind of follow you. Well, that king was the same way. So he did not want his son to go down that spiritual path. So he started to shield him from everything that would lead down that path. All right? He completely wrapped Siddhartha into that little cotton wool thing that we try to do with our kids and protect them from anything icky that he would ever see that would lead him to start to go down that spiritual path. All right? He was never exposed to any type of suffering. He never saw anything. He lived in this beautiful, opulent palace, and he never saw sickness. He never saw death. He never saw any ugliness at all. So he had this beautiful, blissful life full of luxury. Every desire was fulfilled. He excelled. They say he excelled in all of his endeavors. He was very bright. He was able to do any of the physical endeavors that they had back in the day, whether it was archery or any of those things. And eventually he got married. Okay? And he had a child. He was never really satisfied with his life, though. He was never really satisfied with things. I mean, we can all relate to that. We go through times where we're not really set. You're here because you're not satisfied with something in your life. That's what brought you in these doors. So we can all relate to that feeling. He just really wasn't satisfied with things. So one time, he snuck out with some of his servants, and he snuck out of the castle. And when he snuck out, he saw four sights. Okay, so you're sneaking out with your buddies, you're sneaking out with your servants, and all of a sudden he was looking around at the real world, and he saw four sights. They call these the four sights. Anybody know what they are? I'm going to start asking questions because we're going to start having this, okay? So the first thing he saw was a sick person. He'd never seen anybody sick. Anytime that anybody got sick, they would move them to another part of the castle. He never really saw anybody suffering, anybody was sick. And so he asked, well, what is that? Well, that's a sick person. They had to explain what illness was, what sickness was to him. He'd never seen it. And it is possible to go through some of this. And I've had many friends that have never seen any hardships or sick people or dying or anything. He saw an old person. He had to ask about that. Who? What is that? Old. Okay, some of us who are starting to get older, we change, the wrinkles, the gray hair, it changes, you look different, you're old. So he had to be explained about what an old person is. He saw a dead body. Now that's a real shock. How many people in this room have never seen a dead body? There are people today that haven't. So that sounds, well, it sounds like, oh, I can't believe that. There's many people that have never seen a dead body. It's the first time he saw it. He did not understand what death was. So they had to explain death. Try to explain death to people. It's very difficult. And then he saw a wandering mendicant. He saw a holy person. He saw another monk. And he had to ask, what is that? Who is that? When he's seeing all this illness and sickness and death, how come that person seems happy and calm? So they tried to explain that to him. So if you think about those sights and how very powerful that those would be to somebody who has only ever lived this life of, you know, perfection and luxury, they're quite shocking. All right? So he, when he went back, it really struck him. It really stayed with him. And he started thinking about everybody that I love, myself and everybody I love, are going to get sick. They're going to die. That was shocking to him. And so he just literally decided that he had to figure something out. He could not continue to live the life that he had. He needed to figure something out. And he needed to try to find the why. Why is it like that? So he left. He left the castle. He left his wife. He left his child. And he went and became a monk. And the first thing that he did is he went down that path of complete asceticism. Okay? That, now you've all seen those pictures of the Buddha where total skinny, you can see every rib. Okay, so he went down that path. He had lived this life of luxury of having everything, and then he went to the severe asceticism where he had nothing. They say surviving on one grain of rice a day, some of those things that you hear. All right, he actually, after engaging in that for 6 years, okay, and he was with these other monks that, you know, they're all trying to find themselves. They tend to come together. After about 6 years, he found that he was so hungry, he was so tired, he was so weak, he could not concentrate, and he couldn't meditate. Okay, it took him so far past that he just couldn't do the meditation. And the story goes that he was laying on the side of a river when down on this raft there was a musician. And the musician had their form of a guitar, and he was playing it. And he talked to Gautama, and he talked to him about the music and the beauty coming from these strings. But the musician explained, if the strings are too loose or too tight, it doesn't sound right. I can't get that perfection, that beauty. It needs to be just the middle way. And so that kind of snapped into his mind there. You can't have this total luxury, and you can't have this total giving everything up, the asceticism. It's got to be the middle way. And so at that point, he got some help from a maiden who came and fed him and brought him back to strength. And at that point, that's when he really became more renewed, and he went and he sat under the Bodhi tree at Bodh Gaya until he became enlightened. Okay, this is not far from the river that he was on. It's over in India, and he sat down under this tree, and he resolved not to move from his meditation seat until he had cleared away the remaining obstacles to enlightenment in his mind. So they say that what happened is that the last Mars, we're going to go through some of this terminology. Again, I'm giving you this kind of this overview, and then we're going to dig down a little bit. But those delusions that we get, okay, so that voice that tells you, you can't do that. You're trying to study for some test. You're trying to gain some degree so that you can go on, but it's hard. Things that you find, and you kind of have that little voice that says, you can't do it, you can't do it. Okay, those delusions that we have at the end there, the delusions, the Mar came at him with all of the delusions and throwing at him that you're never going to be able to become enlightened. You're never going to be able to do this. That last little stretch of things where he just said, you know what, I can. And he reached down and touched the earth. You can see it in all of the different tankas that we have. That's that symbolism of he reached down, touched the earth, and made that vow that I can do this. By the witness of the earth, I can become enlightened. I can use and see all of the things that I have done. I can see my past life. I can see how this works. And at that moment, he became enlightened. All right, and again, we're going to go through this in much more detail. But right now, that's the story of how he became enlightened. Okay, he sat there and he looked at his mind. That's all he did. He sat under that tree and he looked at his mind. And he became enlightened. Now, what does that mean? All right, it's kind of like Sir Isaac Newton and gravity. He didn't make it up. He discovered it, is the best way I can explain that. Okay, he didn't make this up. He discovered it. Now, since he is not a god, and he could not just reach out and enlighten all of us, he did the next best thing. He started to teach. This is how I did it. This is what worked for me. And that is what has been being done for the last 2,500 years. And this is the start of tonight's class. This is how he did it. It's not easy, but there is a path. And they wrote it down, and he started teaching it. The first main teaching that he did at Sarnath was the Four Noble Truths. Okay, when he got up from the Bodhi tree and he went off to start this, he ran into those monks that had been with him during that ascetic time, and they could tell that there was something different. You know, their first thing was a little bit upset with him because he had left them, but then they realized that there was something different about him, and they did learn from him, and they became his first pupils. All right, again, more to come. But that's the first teaching, is the Four Noble Truths, and that's what we're going to be going down. Questions? The Buddha is not a god. He was a man who became enlightened. Because he's not a god, he can't just enlighten us, but he can teach us. Does that make sense? Okay. Let's go back. Everybody staying with me? Do you need to stand up and shake it off a little bit? We've got a few more minutes that I want to go through so we can at least get started on some of this. Okay.
How
Well, the Buddhism is not... Okay. So the question...
Sure.
It's okay.
How were there
monks, before the Buddha? Okay. Buddha was not a Buddhist any more than Jesus was a Christian. Okay? It started there. But there have been faiths and different types of spirituality long before the Buddha. Okay, so I didn't say they were Buddhist monks.
So they were just
spiritual people. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, there have been spiritual people from the beginning of time, from the beginning of mankind. All right. I'm not even going to start to go down that path. My husband reads all that stuff, so I've got enough knowledge to get me in trouble there. But do you understand? So we saw spiritual people, okay? But Buddha wasn't a Buddhist any more than Jesus was a Christian. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, so we saw the four sites, went to Bodh Gaya. Buddha means enlightened one. Buddha means enlightened one. In fact, they started Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakya means clan. Okay, that was his family. Muni means sage. Shakyamuni Buddha. So, enlightened one. We're going to start some of the things that we're going to do. And one of these days I'll make the PowerPoint. We'll have it on the high. This thing's been around for 2 years and I keep moving it around. So what does enlightenment mean? One of the things that we're going to be doing is we're going to talk about words. Yes, sir?
Question.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, good.
So back to the hand thing. So I see how he has the right hand to the earth. And what's the other hand doing?
The other hand is usually holding something. And that can be many different things. The hand symbols, mudras, they're called, mean different things. And they all have different things. Some of them he's holding different things, so he can hold things to offer things. They all have different meanings. They're called mudras, and you'll see different ones, and that's a whole teaching unto itself.
There's a clear purpose for
there's
the
a
one
clear
hand
purpose.
And the other one's just
well, it depends on which one we're talking about because they're all different. Okay, so and many times they're holding, like in this one, he's holding one of the auspicious jewels, I believe. So he's usually holding something.
Okay.
But he can be doing, so this one's the touching the earth. You'll see different mudras, and they do all have different meanings. But I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
Geshe Tsongpo may be teaching a class that will go through some of those things. We're talking to him about that. So if you're interested in that, we're going to have a class on that pretty soon. He's much better to learn all that stuff from. Oh, and just since we're, as long as we're talking about it, this book is up here on the altar. Okay, sometime if you come during a Sunday, I do a brief Gampa tour. This is called Altar and Images. So this is a little book that's got just about everything that we have in this room. Okay, the explanation is in here. Feel free, if you're ever here, to pick this up and go ahead and go through it. So it just sits right up here. And toward the other classes, one of the other classes, I'll explain some of this stuff. Everything in here is about your mind. Everything in here is about your mind. These pictures right here, you can look at this as a Western PowerPoint. I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating. This all means something. Okay? But we're sitting in a cultural environment right now. A Tibetan Buddhist cultural environment. We brought this over to the West, okay, and we could have different symbols that mean the same thing that we'd understand because it's all a cultural thing, right? These are all PowerPoints. These are lesson plans. These are all teachings because back in the day, 2,500 years ago, 2,000 years ago, they didn't have Macs. They had drawings. So this is how they used them. These are all teachings. Sand mandalas, they're all teachings. Everything in here is a teaching. Prayer flags. These all have teachings on there. The reason that the wind goes through these and carry those wishes and those prayers to others. Everything in here is a teaching. And everything in here is about your mind. Okay. So, what does enlightenment mean? What are we talking about when we're saying reaching enlightenment? Full awakening removed all obscurations, negativities. Who is that back there? Wanted to remove negativities? That's you. Enlightenment means you removed all the obscurations, all the negativities, and you fully developed all virtuous states of mind, all the positive states of mind. Take the ick out, bring all of the good up, and the Buddha says it's possible. It is possible to remove all negativities and increase those virtuous states of mind. It is possible. So, the Buddha is a teacher. The first turning of the wheel, this is what they call the teachings, turnings of the wheel. The first one was at Sarnath, the Four Noble Truths we're going to go through here. We're going to start talking terminology, okay? This class, we're going to be having a lot of definitions so that we know that we're talking about the same thing. Because so many times we have been, translations have been made from Sanskrit, from Pali, all of these different things, and sometimes the words are kind of a little muffled. So we're going to go through a lot of definitions here. Okay? The Buddha had 84,000 different teachings. That's what these are up here on our altar. Those little squares of orange. If I pulled those down, they would be like these cardboard papers, harder than paper, written in Tibetan. The teachings of the Buddha are there. All right? Geshla and Geshe Sangpo read those. We don't. But they're there. They're all there. Okay? We normally are studying the commentaries. Okay? There's a lot of books out there that have the different commentaries. And a lot of the books that you guys have read are commentaries on these teachings. So they help to explain them a little bit better. Okay? You're going to hear the word dharma a lot. Dharma, that which protects and holds. Buddhism is like the levels or layers of an onion. Many things mean many different things. We're going to continue to peel back these layers, okay? Dharma can mean, conventionally it means the teachings, or it can mean the actions, or actions. The ultimate dharma, ultimately, we're not talking about the teachings. We're talking about those awarenesses. When you have those aha moments and get it, the dharma, okay? When you actually have those realizations attained along the path, the liberation, like when you actually kind of get it, you know those times that you get where you're going along and I'm saying, oh, that, I get it. Dharma. When we're talking about the Buddha's teachings and you have that, that's the ultimate dharma. I love those moments. I get those. I still get those. That's what keeps me coming. Okay? So Buddhism, all of this is about your mind. Period. End of story. You, what works for your mind may be different than what works for her mind. We have 84 different teachings up here. Sometimes it'll feel like some of those teachings kind of contradict each other. They don't. But what works for you may not work for him. So we have a teaching for you. We have a teaching for you. Okay? And that's why having a teacher that can help you figure out what's going to work for you is so important. All right? Because all of this is about the mind. 8:15, where does it go? Okay. The spread of Buddhism. So Buddhism started in India. Again, 2,600 years ago, right? Buddhism started in India. It went through India, Sri Lanka, Asia, Southeast Asia, China, Japan, Tibet, and all of these different Buddhist traditions kind of grew up around there. All right, so as it spread, whether it was socio-geographic variations, ethnological changes, Zen kind of took place in Japan, all right, the Chinese Buddhism, but the core is always the same. The core of Buddhism is the same, but there's just slight variations around the world. You'll see a few different looks to the Buddha, the statues and stuff, so you can start to look. You say, I know that that's Thai, that's Thailand. Okay, just from the look, more pointed head. So there's different kind of flavors, but the core of Buddhism is the same. Same basis, okay? There are two main strains, Hinayana, Theravada, okay? This talks about the individual release from suffering, Nirvana, what we all know as Nirvana. That's the Hinayana. The Mahayana, which is the universal path, means you not only reach Nirvana, but you reach enlightenment. Okay? Same thing in some of the writings. They talk about it as greater and lesser. they don't mean that as this one is better than this one, because it's just like you're swimming and somebody's drowning. You have to know how to swim to save that person. So if you were going to be in the Mahayana, you'd have to have Hinayana in order to do that. So it's not one is better than the other. They're the same. They're just slightly different. Different focuses. Questions? We're doing okay? Okay, Vajrayana is another. We're not going to go there. That's at the fast path. Tibetan Buddhism actually has four schools. Okay. Oh, let's see if I haven't even thought about this in a long time. Four schools. Shakya, Kagyu, Nyingma, Gelupa. That was good. I'm impressed. Okay. Same thing like Methodist. Okay. It's that same type of breakdown. Again, still the same thing, slight variations. Okay. We're in the Gelupa. The Dalai Lama is Gelupa tradition. The Dalai Lama has been the spiritual head of all of them. Okay, so he's the spiritual leader of all of these schools. Okay, but he is the formal head of the Gelupa tradition. Okay, again, Geshe Gelug Choda. He's been at the center. We don't have a picture of Geshe in here, do we? Some of you have had a chance to see Geshe. He's going to be traveling now, so you're not going to have the opportunity. We are so fortunate to have Geshe Gelug Choda here. He is a Tibetan monk from India. He is not only a Geshe. Geshe means, it's like professor. That's a title. Okay, Gelug Choda is his name. Geshe is his title. 30-some-odd years in the monastery. He is very advanced practitioner, and he is very knowledgeable, and we are so fortunate to have, and you wouldn't know it. He is the most humble monk, okay? You wouldn't know it. But not only is he a Geshe, he's a Larampa Geshe, which is kind of like summa cum laude. So he's like way up there. And you don't really realize that until you get around like all these other monks in the world and you're at some big thing of the Dalai Lama's when they defer to Geshe, because he doesn't come off that way. Now we have Geshe Gelug Choda. We also have Geshe Paldon Tsangpo here, who is Geshe's attendant. Now not only is he his attendant, he's also a Geshe. So we have two Geshes here at Kadampa Center. There are centers that don't even have Sangha. And we have two Geshes, and we have three Western nuns. Okay, why is that so important? You know what? Because they do such a phenomenal job of really helping to translate some of these Americanized teachings. You know, Geshe has no clue what a Nintendo game is. And when we're trying to talk about getting our kids away from that computer, you know, he's trying to understand it. And we have Chukila or Lamala who can explain it to us. And so it really helps. It's really phenomenal. So if you get a chance to come meet any of our Sangha spiritual community, here's another layer. Sangha, S-A-N-G-H-A. Sangha can mean, at one point, that these are our teachers. This is our ordained community. Sangha can also mean our community. We tend to use it just for the ordained people, but it can have a broader aspect, our spiritual community. Okay, we have five Sangha here. We are so blessed, and we have the real deal. You're sitting here listening to me. Honestly, go listen to anything that they say. They can read the phone book, and I'm there. I'm not kidding. If once you get around them and you see that, they just have that thing. What was that movie, When Harry Met Sally? I want that. Okay? I want that. They've got it. And I love to spend time around them. Okay. So Kadampa Center, those who put the teachings of the Buddha into practice. How much time? 10 minutes. I'm trying to go fast. I was thinking about letting pause. Okay. Buddhism is about the mind. We've talked about that. Everything is about the mind. Developing the positive states of mind. What happens when we're positive? We're happy. That is it right there. This is all about happiness. All we want to do is be happy, right? Everybody in this room wants to be happy. Everybody on this planet wants to be happy. Everybody. There isn't a person, there isn't an animal, there isn't a sentient being on this planet that just doesn't want to be happy. That's it. That's all we want. Removing the negative states of mind. What are negative states? They cause suffering. Negative states cause suffering. If we could get rid of the suffering, we could be happy. It's really this simple. It really is this simple. It's hard to do, but it's that simple to understand. Okay, once we do this, Once we develop those positive states of minds, and once we remove the negative states, that's enlightenment. That is enlightenment. Okay? Now let's define mind. Okay? Especially from a Western perspective. Is this my mind? No. This is my brain. Your mind is non-physical. Mind, from the way that we're going to talk about it in this class, mind is not the brain. So from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, mind, consciousness, we can use those interchangeably. It's non-physical, so it's not the brain. It is clear. It has the nature of being clear. It's like the clear sky without a single cloud in it, that clear sky. Okay? The mind is clear, a clear lake, a mirror. That's the mind. Okay? What is the mind? It is aware. From your science classes, sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, right? The five senses. Tibetan Buddhism adds mental awareness. We have six senses, mental awareness. All right? Its function, the function of the mind is to know. That's its job, to know. It has, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, we'll get into this, but let me just get it out. It has no beginning and no end. So that's when we talk about the mind, when we talk about consciousness in this class, that's what we're talking about. Clear. Its job is to know, it's aware, and it has no beginning and no end. It is a continuity that is just that stream, and it is continually changing. All right? We have, the mind is made up of all these little mental mind moments. Okay? It is said that there are 67? 64. 64 mental moments in a snap of a hand, in a second. 64. We're conscious and we are aware of this total gross level up here. Okay? When we're working with our mind, it's trying to be aware of we're going deeper. Okay? We're going to talk about all of this in much more depth, but it's just letting us understand what we're talking about so that we're all on the same page when we're talking about the mind. I could do 3 minutes of a discussion there, or we can do 3 minutes of a meditation. Meditation? All right. Then we'll go there at the end, because it is 8:24. I cannot believe how fast this time goes. All right. Let's do another very brief concentration meditation. This one's called Scanning the Body. This, again, is one of the handouts, okay? Okay, so the first thing, calming the mind again, getting us back here. We're going to let go of all of these things that we just talked about. And we're going to come back. We're going to get in that 7-point meditation posture. Okay, so again, think about your legs. Get yourself comfortable. Once you start to do this, again, it will fall into place. I can do this automatically very easily now. Just, it's practice. So, get your legs in that stable position, whether you're sitting on a chair or a cushion. Get your arms and hands comfortable and in. They can either be on your knees, that's fine if you're not comfortable, with your right hand and your left, thumb slightly touching. In the base, your back is straight but not totally stiff. Your shoulders are back, opening up your chest and your breathing. Your head is slightly tilted forward. Your eyes are closed or slightly open. Your tongue is touching the top of your palate, slightly behind your teeth. Your jaw is relaxed and your teeth are not clenched. Focus your attention on your breathing and breathe naturally. Become present in the moment and place where you are, and just focus on the rising and falling of your shoulders and chest as you inhale and exhale gently. Allow your mind to settle, become calm, present, ready to engage in meditation. Create an altruistic motivation for the meditation session and think that you are meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be of benefit to all beings. Focus your attention on your physical body. Find the most suitable sitting position for meditation. Spine straight and erect, a position in which you can be aware and awake, but not stiff or rigid. Focus your attention on the lowermost point of your body, where your body is in contact with the earth, with the chair, with the cushion. Feel the substance and earthy character of your body. Concentrate for a moment on that contact, on the weight and substance of this physical form. Pay attention to the character of your mind, your consciousness, while focusing here. Now slowly and mindfully move your attention upward through your body. Pay close attention to every aspect of your body, your physical sensations. Note areas of tension and relax them. Note sensations of coolness or warmth. Note places where one part of your body is touching another. Move upward through your legs, your hips, your hands in your lap. Note the curves of your body's silhouette. Move upward your belly, your waist, the curve of your arms. Continue to move upward. The rising and falling of your chest with your breathing, the curves of your shoulders. Keep moving upward slowly and mindfully. Pay special attention to your shoulders, neck, and jaw. If there's tension there, relax those areas. Move still upward, the tilt of your head, until you reach the crown of your head. Allow your attention to rest at your crown for a moment. Pay attention to the character of your mind, your consciousness, while focusing here. And be aware, is your mind's character different while concentrating here than it was when you were focused on the lowermost point of your body? And what differences can you note? Slowly, slowly move your attention back downward through your body in the same way. Move slowly and mindfully, noting everything about your body as you move your attention back downward. Bring your attention all the way back down to the cushion or the floor, where your body is in contact with the earth. And again, focus your concentration at this point. Note the character of your consciousness when focusing here. Note the nature of your mind state when concentrating here, and notice any differences from your mind state when you were concentrating at your crown. Just think about it for a minute. Finally, dedicate this positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. And bring your attention back. We almost got to where I wanted to stop. Do you have any questions? Okay, next time we'll start with a brief meditation. I'll probably do, again, something similar, what we call a concentration meditation, to start the class. Okay, we'll do a very brief review to make sure that we're all on the same path if we have some newcomers, and then we're going to go into some of the details of the Four Noble Truths. And again, this class, we're going to cover a lot of ground here. We're going to talk about karma. We're going to talk about the teachings of the Buddha. We're going to talk about emptiness. We're going to talk about rebirth and reincarnation. So we're going to cover a lot of topics. Again, we're not going to deep dive too much, but let's just see where it takes us. And again, we do everything here completely through generosity. So if you got anything from it, we have donation boxes in the back outside and also on the table up front. There's a little bit of information out there about the center. Feel free. I'll be around for a few minutes, and we've got a couple of other people that might be here. I hope to see you again. And I'll understand if I don't. It's okay. Thanks so much for coming. And it really does mean something. You did something special here. To step outside your boundaries, walk into a new place, some a little different, and you did it. You got to be proud of that. So I'll talk to you all later. Take care.